From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders' appearance at a Fox News town hall this week has angered President Donald Trump. In a pair of tweets, Trump referred to the Democratic presidential frontrunner as Crazy Bernie and said it was weird and strange to see Sanders on Fox, an outlet he relies heavily on for political advice as well as a campaign platform. Sanders drew a huge viewership for the televised town hall and appeared to also draw support from the live audience gathered there around issues of taxes, healthcare, and more. A new national poll shows Sanders leading among Democratic presidential contenders, even ahead of Vice President Joe Biden. But rather than coalescing behind the frontrunner who seems most capable of taking on Trump, centrist Democrats appear to be readying negative attacks on Sanders. My guest is Dr. Peter Bloom, a lecturer in the Department of People and Organizations at Open University in the UK. He's published widely on issues of democracy, politics, and economics in publications like The Washington Post, The New Statesman, Roar, Open Democracy, The Conversation, and Common Dreams. His books include Authoritarian Capitalism in the Age of Globalization and Beyond Power and Resistance, Politics at the Radical Limits. His latest article is entitled The Divisive Center versus the Unifying Left. Welcome to the program, Peter.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So how important was it for Sanders to appear on Fox News? Do you think that his gamble paid off when he was invited? He agreed, and some people worried that maybe it would sort of play into the hands of the right.
I think it definitely paid off in the sense that he showed that the issues and the way he speaks about the issues actually has a huge amount of appeal that actually crosses traditional party lines. And this is something that political scientists have known for quite a long time, that actually these quote-unquote bread and butter issues done from the left around taxes, around healthcare, even around foreign policy are actually incredibly popular. So I think going on the program, he showed not only that he's a Democratic frontrunner, but actually that he has widespread appeal and his ideas have widespread appeal to a large cross-section of Americans.
It's interesting to hear that because he has become a millionaire from the sales of his best-selling book, he's being attacked from both the right and the left. So, of course, that Fox News hosts, asked him that kind of standard question. Well, if you like paying taxes so much, if you hate Trump's tax reform bill so much, why don't you just pay more taxes? You're now a millionaire. That was sort of a predictable question. What was not predictable was that ahead of that town hall, Think Progress, a very prominent left-leaning online publication, released a hit piece video against Sanders for being a millionaire. I did not expect that. Why do you think it did that?
Well, I think there's two reasons. I mean, I think firstly, it's good to, you know, be careful about our language. I mean, and I think this is what's happening with Sanders' campaign, but just in general, in terms of the changing political context, and that something like the Center for American Progress is not left-wing.
The Center for American Progress runs Think Progress, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Sorry, apologies. Yeah. Absolutely, for the audience. And I think it's important to see that, you know, they are largely right-wing in terms of the funders that they have, the policy proposals that they put out, and largely the ideologies that they have.
So you would characterize Center for American Progress as right-wing?
I would say that within a broader kind of American context right now, I think that they are center-right to center-left. Okay. I don't think that they necessarily can be seen as a, you know, huge progressive organization. And I think you see that in terms of some of the ways in which they're responding to, like, the Democratic Socialists of America and also the Sanders campaign, which is in a way that is much more reactionary than I would say supportive. And I think that's largely because even though they sometimes will use similar language and they sometimes will try to get, you know, a similar voting base, actually they do represent two different visions of America and they represent two different largely interests.
And Center for American Progress, it should be noted, it was essentially formed by former Clinton administration officials. And it's run currently, the CAP is run currently by a very, overtly pro-Clinton person named Neera Tanden. I'm wondering if you saw Paul Krugman's tweet in support of Tanden saying the smearing of CAP and Neera Tanden is really something to behold, because it suggests that some people in both the media and political life have learned nothing. For the first time in a couple of years, I'm starting to feel that Trump might get re-elected. So he is referring to the fact that Sanders pushed back against Think Progress, and that this now means that Trump might win. How do you make sense of his tweet?
So I think it's really interesting. I mean, I think on the one hand, the pushing back is totally legitimate and fine. And I think that it was a type of ad and a type of attack that wasn't really worthy of intellectual engagement. And the tone of it was largely, I'd say, off-putting. I think, though, that one of the things that we have to do is try not to personalize it, right? So instead of looking at Neera Tanden, who is a very strong Clinton supporter, used to work for her campaigns, and also if you look at the Center of American Progress and Think Progress as largely Clinton projects, instead of looking at them as bad or good, to actually look at them as who are their donors? Who do they represent? What type of vision do they have? So in a sense, if you don't like what they're saying, instead of smearing them or going against them in terms of, their personalities, to actually say, this is where they sit on the political spectrum. I mean, they are trying to achieve largely kind of progressive ends while not upsetting the status quo or challenging the corporate donors that they rely upon. And I think that's a really, that's one vision of America. That's one type of politics. And I think Sanders and others, and I think, the progressive movement that's growing up, they're representing something different. And it's not about personalities. It's more about, what are their ultimate ideas? What are their ultimate ideologies? What do they ultimately think is possible, right? So I think, the Center for American Progress, without personalizing it, without saying, oh, well, the person running it's bad or whatever, I think it's a type of politics which is we can achieve, social and economic justice without upsetting, corporations, without challenging Wall Street. And I think Sanders and others look at it quite differently.
And it's not clear yet if Sanders or his campaign folks have identified what you were just saying in terms of the big corporate donors as being part of the problem with groups like Center for American Progress and their outlet Think Progress. Something that people have pointed out is that this time round, Sanders is not taking some of these attacks from within the party lying down, because he has a lot more clout than he did in 2016. His campaign manager, Faiz Shakir, who used to actually work for Think Progress, he was an editor there, said, I think this time around he wants to make sure that people understood he wasn't just going to be a punching bag. So it's interesting to see Sanders very early on, instead of capitulating, to fight back and to speak up. Let's talk about the fact that the people like Paul Krugman and others feel that a Sanders nomination, that if Sanders emerges from the Democratic National Convention in 2020 as the candidate, that means we're going to see another 4 years of Trump. To me, that doesn't make sense, given that Hillary Clinton lost to Trump. But is that the prevailing attitude you're seeing, that Sanders is divisive?
I think that, you have to see which kind of world you're talking about. So I think definitely within mainstream Washington politics and the mainstream media, if you can use that term, yes, there's a very kind of sense, oh, America would never vote for a socialist, or Sanders is too far to the left. But if I can be provocative for a moment, you know what this sounds like? And you can almost point to the same words that were used in 2008. Well, Obama has a lot of good ideas, but would Americans really ever vote for him? Is he safe to vote to nominate? I mean, we can't really nominate him. I mean, Midwest America would never vote for someone named Barack Obama. And I think that was proven quite wrong. And I think this represents a narrowness of thinking. and also a refusal to confront the evidence. I mean, all the evidence says that people like Sanders is popular, his ideas are popular, and that really what Americans want is change. They are upset at inequality. They're upset at the fact that they feel like the wealthy are not only not paying their fair share, but are unproductive. And they're upset at the ways in which America is currently structured and oriented and who it works for. So in a sense, you know, what they're really doing is saying, we don't think that Sanders can win because he's so different than anything that we've seen before in this space. But so is Trump. So is Barack Obama. And until the Democrats, which are a very corporate-based party, you know, stop this type of thinking, they're constantly going to be on the losing end. And I think there's another point that excites people about Sanders, which is that, you know, in a sense, with the Democrats, sometimes you feel like even if you win, you lose, right? Because you can win an election, but, you know, the Affordable Care Act, which was, you know, the milestone of Obama's administration, right? He wasn't even to get a public option when the Democrats controlled the entire government, right? You think about all the Republicans are able to achieve and then all what the Democrats are not. And that's because despite everything else, the Republicans have two things that Democrats don't. They have a very clear underlying ideology that drives them and that allows them to overcome personal differences. It's not an ideology I agree with, I think many of your listeners will, but it's very clear for them. And two, they have a very clear class interest, which is essentially, you know, they can use populist rhetoric, but it is the financial and political elites. That is their class interest. The Democrats have neither of those things. And I think Sanders represents something different because progressives like him do have this just from the other end of the spectrum.
It is interesting to see Democrats claiming that the country is more of a centrist country in general. And I want to actually pick up on a quote that you put in your piece from Clinton a number of years ago, or actually wasn't even a number of years ago, it was quite recent, where she did, in an interview on Vox, said, Clinton said, "We've shrunk the political process to such a narrow set of questions, and that's in the interests of both the far right and the far left, both of whom want to blow up system and undermine it. I think we operate better when we're kind of between center-right and center-left, because that's where, at least up until recently, most Americans were." This seems to be exactly the kind of attitude that was reflected in Nancy Pelosi's recent 60 Minutes interview, where she said Democrats have to hold the center. We have to go down the mainstream. Are they out of touch with where the country is?
I think absolutely. So again, I think, let's put this, you know, before even the politics, substantively. I think it's very worrying when I hear things such as, you know, we have to hold the center, or, you know, Americans were at the center, because, you know, for me, you have to then ask as a country, what does this center represent? What are the values that this represents, right? I mean, Hillary Clinton was speaking and, you know, she was almost directly responsible for reinforcing the coup that happened in Honduras by the far-right oligarchs that is largely attributable to now all the asylum seekers coming in to the United States, right? And this is centrism? I mean, that's arguably a crime against humanity. If you look at the ways in which, you know, she helped to orchestrate the, you know, disastrous invasion of Libya and everything that's happened afterwards. I mean, if you think that's centrism, then that's a very dangerous sense of what our country represents, right? So I think there's the first part about saying, wait a minute, if you think this is moderation, maybe then we need an extreme change, because this doesn't seem moderate to me. It doesn't seem moderate that we're the wealthiest country in the world and we have people who don't have health insurance. It's not moderate when you have so many people in poverty. It's not moderate when you know that you're the largest military power in the world and you're not only using that for good, but you're actually using that in a way that's very destructive, right? I mean, if you think imperialism is moderate, then maybe you need to have a rethink about what you think moderation is. So there's that point that I think is not questioned enough. And then there's the political point, which is nothing is suggesting that this is popular opinions. In fact, quite the opposite. And I think that for that reason, there has to be a real shift in saying, who are the types of coalitions that you can build upon, And what are the ideas that are going to actually animate those
And in
coalitions?
fact, we saw some of that on display during the Fox News town hall, during a moment that Sanders didn't even speak up. It was when the hosts of the Fox News town hall asked how many people in the audience had private health insurance through their employers, and a number of people raised their hands. Not that many, but it was sprinkled throughout. And then when they asked, "Would you be willing to give that up for a Medicare for all system?" loud cheers went up, and a lot more people raised their hands. Something that I think even Sanders might have been surprised by, and certainly the Fox News hosts were surprised by. So, and just going back to what you were raising around foreign policy issues, we saw the Yemen resolution, which Trump just vetoed, was something that Sanders championed, brought to the Senate. And actually, you have Nancy Pelosi condemning Trump's veto of that, sounding like she's on the side of this radical leftist and his position in wanting the U.S. support for the Saudi war in Yemen ending. It seems as though the centrist Democrats don't really know what their values are, and they're being dragged along because Sanders and the mainstream of the U.S. are moving left, and they just don't like having to be dragged in that direction.
Well, I think it's really interesting in the sense that people talk a lot about democratic socialism, and that's something that I think, we can have a discussion about. But, what is the difference between Democrats and democratic socialism? Well, one of the core things is that a Democrat is going to ultimately go with what they think is going to win them political power.
And Democrat,
But
big D, of course.
yeah, a Democrat with a big D, right? So, Hillary Clinton, but other Democrats have said, they've evolved on things. But it just so happens they evolve on things when the rest of the country does, right? You can almost pinpoint popular opinion and when they've evolved on things. So for them, the entire basis is winning, right? Whereas for a Democratic Socialist, I mean, if Bernie Sanders loses, right? If, the kind of, progressives that are coming up now, if they don't win power again, they're not going to simply, change their views to win another election. They're going to do things like union organizing. They're going to continue to fight for their cause. And that's because they believe in something more than just winning power. They want to win power for a reason. And I think that's something that, like, what you're seeing now, what you're saying with people like Nancy Pelosi, is that it's such a huge shift in thinking that it's not just small t tactics. It's not just politics for politics' sake, that there's a bigger game going on here, which is essentially we don't just want the throne, right? We don't just want this empty seat of power. We actually want to create a movement that changes how people think and changes how America acts and works both in the world and at home. And so when you have that type of shift, I think it takes a while for, people who spent their entire career kind of cynically just following whatever popular attitudes are at the time to actually realize this is a different type of politics.
It sometimes seems as though centrist Democrats would rather not win political power than allowing a leftist among them to win political power. And I want to talk about the New York Times article that came out this week entitled "Stop Sanders, Democrats are agonizing over his momentum." And they quote David Brock, who is, the paper called him a liberal organizer, but he's another one like Neera Tanden, a pro-Clintonite. And Brock said, "There's a growing realization that Sanders could end up winning this thing, or certainly that he stays in so long that he damages the actual winner, and that he's had discussions with other operatives about an anti-Sanders campaign and believes it should commence sooner rather than later." I'm not sure if that Think Progress video was part of this anti-Sanders campaign, but it's shocking to see Democrats talk about launching a negative attack ahead of the primary elections against the man that a national poll has just shown would win the nomination, and many, are convinced would beat Trump. It's just really shocking.
Absolutely. I mean, I think what's really interesting about this, and reading that article, you see some really kind of tropes that I think need to be addressed. The first is this, clear idea of, who they're going to lose as voters. So I think it was in that article or a Washington Post article, I forget, where one of the Democratic operatives from the center was like, this Medicare for all, we might lose affluent people in the suburbs who don't want to give up their health care. And you're thinking, okay, I understand that, but if that's your coalition basis, right? If that's who you're worried about, then you're not paying attention to the vast majority of Americans who either don't have healthcare or have healthcare that's so precarious they can barely afford it,
I think that
right?
was in the Washington Post article, which was entitled, Can
Yes.
Bernie Sanders Really Win Over Trump Voters? Yeah.
Yes. And I find it really interesting that that is the ways in which they think. And I think that's largely because they're not connected to social movements. They're not connected to real unions. I mean, they completely live within a bubble of corporate lobbyists and, beltway politics. And so when you live in that bubble, you don't really have a sense of what most Americans are going through, what most Americans feel, and actually what most Americans, need. And I think the other part about that is, they don't want to lose their corporate donors. And what really scares them about people like Sanders is the fact that he was able to run almost an entire campaign based on small donors.
Without the corporate donors, that's right. He doesn't need their corporate donors and therefore isn't tied to the agenda of the corporate donors.
100%. So when you have that, all of a sudden, and then I think you also have this fact that, the entire basis of most of the Democratic Party is accepting money from people that they then try to attract the votes from the people who are most, hurt by who's giving them money, right? So they accept money from Wall Street, but then really try to get, all the votes they can from people who are most hurt by Wall Street. And their basis for that is saying, well, there's nothing really we can do, right? There's a very limited window of what we can do. We have to act pragmatically, act within political possibility. And I think with someone like Sanders, it's not that he's saying very radical things, to be honest. I mean, within a
Right.
European context, it would be, pretty centrist itself. What it does, though, and what I tried to present in this article, is that it represents a recognition of saying, that is just narrow thinking that really does not represent what you can do politically. And it's not impossible to do these things. And it's only impossible for you because you're tied to corporate donors, because you're tied to a very narrow ideological agenda.
So finally, the characterization from the centrist Democrats is that the left is divisive and that the center is unifying. Your article is called The Divisive Center Versus the Unifying Left. Can you finally quickly make that case why the
Yes.
center is what's divisive and why the left can be unifying?
I think the center is extremely divisive, and I think it's divisive because it believes in unity in support of a status quo. So what it wants is not actually to unify people around a common cause of fixing the country and transforming it and making it better. What it wants is someone who can speak with beautiful rhetoric that can actually, quote unquote, heal the wounds, but actually do nothing about the actual structural things that are causing our divides. And what it relies upon ultimately is the divisiveness of Republicans are the problem. That's the main problem, Republicans, not capitalism, not imperialism, Republicans, and these people on the far left who don't have any ideas, who are just as bad as, the far right. And I think that, what you see here then is a divisive center in the sense that they don't want to actually unify the country around something positive and truly changing. And they want to just continue to make enemies around people that, either will allow them not to have their position challenged or people that they feel are going to challenge their position. I think what you see with the left and what you saw with the town hall was that here was something in which Sanders was reaching out to independents, first-time voters, working-class Republicans, Democrats, and saying, look, forget all the partisan nonsense. At the end of the day, what bounds us together is our desire to make a fairer, more just country and world, right? Who's actually benefiting from America right now? Is it you? It doesn't look like it's you. How can we create a system that actually benefits not only you, but benefits people all around the world? And how can we overcome our differences so that we can build solidarity around that? And you see this in terms of the left, that what the left is doing is it's building solidarity around common principles of social justice and economic justice, but also allowing for people to really, respect and build solidarity around different struggles. So this is the ways in which you actually have a truly unifying left as opposed to a kind of false unifying center.
Peter, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. We'll post a link to your article from our website. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Sonali. I appreciate it.
My guest has been Dr. Peter Bloom, lecturer in the Department of People and Organizations at Open University in the UK, and his latest article is entitled The Divisive Center versus the Unifying Left. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.